The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined now by a man who has his first theatre production in theatres, I think it's in about 4 or 5 years since his last one. Playwright Mark O'Rourke. The production is Reunion. It's coming to Dublin for 1 week between the 8th and the 13th of October. It's going to the Gaiety. It has to be said, been getting fabulous reviews. Mark, of course, the man behind Intermission, Boyé, Terminus, Our Few and Evil Days. And I'm not sure, and Mark, you're very welcome, I'm not sure is it appropriate to talk about or talk to a playwright about their reviews. Are you meant to ignore them totally?
Well, it's a great question, because I, for about the last 8 years, I've been ignoring them, and it's a real, real act of discipline, because you've got them there on your phone if you want them. So I tend to, there's like a 4 day period where you're like somebody who's just given up cigarettes, and it's so hard. But I think after those 4 days, the need to read them goes, but also you're getting a sense of what they've been like generally. So you're talking about reviews, but what you would have is you'd have quotes from reviews, and I can't help but see them because they get thrown up everywhere, and so.
But do people bring them to you? That's the thing as well. I always find that people come to you and say things like, oh, I was very sorry to read X. I think I've been studiously ignoring X, but now I have a sense of what it must have said.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's really tough. And at the same time, it's kind of when it goes really well, you've got the actors coming up. Have you read this? And have you read that? And you're like, the big thing for me is, and the big reason I made that decision was that you really only have your own judgment to go on. You sort of know how successful or unsuccessful something has been creatively. And in terms of the public reception or critics reception or whatever, that's sort of another thing entirely. And if you let the good stuff affect you and kind of lift your day, well, then you've got to let the bad stuff do it as well. And you can't decide, well, I'd ignore the bad stuff and only pay attention to the good stuff. So it's best to sort of ignore everything.
So how do you then judge when something is critically good or bad? Because surely once you put it on a page, you are committed to it and you believe in it. Is it that it goes squirrely when a director gets hold of it, or?
No, well, generally, like, I direct all my own stuff. I have done for the last kind of 15 years. So the first production...
Control freak, in other words.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, a little bit. But when you put it out into the world, again, it's got nothing to do with you anymore. So you've worked on the play and you've probably worked on it for several years. Then you bring it into rehearsal. You do all your preparations before rehearsal. Then you bring it in. Then you do all your work there. And you put it out there, and it's got to kind of sink or swim by itself. Somebody once asked me, if you get a really bad review in such and such a paper, how do you fix that? No, obviously, it was someone who didn't know anything about how theatre works, but I kind of said, you get about 20 reviews. How do you, and if they all differ, so you really have to, in terms of your own decisions and the decisions you've made at your cast, you've got to stick to them. And it's tougher for actors, because if you get a really bad review, or even if the play gets a really bad review, that's bad enough. If you as an actor are singled out for a really bad review, you still have to go on stage every single night in the face of that, So that's really, really tough. So you've got to be, I think, really, really strong and secure in all the decisions that you've made, so that when you're hit by those kind of negative opinions or whatever, they can't harm you too much.
I get the sense, and I said it facetiously, but I let me posit it as possibly seriously. I get the sense there is an element of control freak in you, that you like to be very in charge of your own work and your own decisions, and don't hand me any notes here, lads.
Well, yeah, I think, most writers are like that. I remember a few years ago I had a play, and I was a good bit into it, and I didn't quite know how to end it. And so I thought, I'll do that thing that people generally do, is you bring it in, you get it, put it into the hands of a few actors, and you do a little bit of a workshop and you see what you feel about it. Now, this was after about like 15, 16 years of writing before then. And I kind of came out, no more informed than I'd been going in. I realised at that point, I'm the kind of writer, because there are many different kinds of writers, who has to go into a corner, bang his head against the wall for months and months and years until I feel it's absolutely, absolutely rock solid, watertight. What happens then is you go into rehearsals and you realise...
They're going to wreck it.
Well, they're going to wreck it, but you realise, there are mistakes here. There are always mistakes, and there are always opportunities to kind of make it a bit more fluid or to investigate other things. So the control freakery thing, I think, extends up to the point that you go into rehearsals. Because in a rehearsal, you've got to open it up to the floor, and the actors have to have a creative involvement. You generally have a really strong idea of, not just the story of the play, but everything in the play. But the one thing that you don't have when you go into a rehearsal room is, each actor has one part to take care of. And they've, even before they go into the rehearsal room, they've investigated that part way deeper than you ever will as a director. So that's invaluable in the room. So if you've got 10 actors like we have with this play, we've got 10 minds, you know, who have probably better ideas than you have about characters, or just are willing to look deeper into those characters. And that's kind of, I did learn as I went along. When I started directing, I was quite controlling, and anyone who worked with me around that time would be able to tell you that. But I think it's not a case of mellowing, it's a case of getting smarter and really using, you know, what you have in the room.
Do you cast accordingly? Because you've had the good and the great through your hand. I mean, you've Colin Farrell, you've Andrew Scott, you've Cillian Murphy. You have a range of some of the best of Irish talent has been in your productions over the years. Do you look at it purely with a view to saying, who's the perfect person for that character, or what's the ensemble that I can put together that I can then farm?
Yeah, I mean, it's both really. You know, for example, just to use an extreme example, if you were doing a one-man show, you've only got one actor, right? So you want somebody who's around who looks like the character might look and who's around the same age range or whatever. With like, particularly with something like Reunion, where it's 10 actors, I think 5 of those people are related. They're the same family, maybe more than 5. That becomes the second thing that you said, which is you're constantly trying to measure each actor against other actors. And it's weird because you have that process before you cast anybody, where it's kind of all up in the air. Because, for example, if I've got 2 sisters, I sort of have to know what one of them looks like before I cast the other one. So you sort of have to jump in the deep end a little bit and cast somebody and then say, okay, we've got to start here. Now, what might her sister look like or her brother look like? I think with theatre, looks, I don't mean attractiveness, I mean just how you look, is slightly less important than in film. I think in film there needs to be probably a little bit of
Is that a simple practicality thing of, on film you are 18 feet high, yeah, and everybody sees you very clearly?
Yeah, you've lots of close-ups, and if you look very different to somebody else, people, I don't believe that. Whereas with theatre, it's so much more an act of imagination on the audience's part, in the sense that if we're told that these two people are related, unless there's something really extremely odd about them being related, then they'll kind of believe what they're told.
Do you have a preference for either? I mean, I assume film and TV is more profitable, theatre more freedom, or is that a false assumption?
It's completely that. No, it's completely correct. There's very little freedom in film and TV. You're constantly, taking notes and trying to please other people and trying to second guess other people. And whereas with theatre, it's sort of the opposite. If somebody chooses to produce your play, I mean, you do get notes and you do get opinions and thoughts, but usually they're, the motivation there is to make what you're trying to do as sort of perfect as it can be. So that's a very, you feel very supported by that. But as you said, there's far less money in theatre. So I found, like, through my career, I've been sort of balancing the two. But I'd love to win the lotto. If I won the lotto, I just write theatre. So the answer is theatre.
Well, I saw you talking about, I think it was Cormac McCarthy, that the reason that he was thrice divorced was because eventually his wives would say, I'm sick of this living on the clippings of tin thing while you follow your muse.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's a generational thing. Maybe it's something that was more common then than it is now. You know, it's yeah, you do have that thing where you go, you have kids and you have... But also you have bills to pay, and also I'm not willing to live in poverty, he was. I think he could sit and, survive on a can of beans a day or something like that. Forget about organic.
Am I right in saying that you have sort of phases of things that you are interested in, that there are sort of periods where, I mean, if you go back to like the intermission style of both plot and topic, that those days are behind you?
I don't know. I mean, it's.
I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean,
no, of course, yeah. It's not really about, being interested in stuff and losing interest in stuff. It's probably about growing older, and I suppose when you're young, it's all about fireworks and virtuosity and also a lot of the stuff that I was inspired by was sort of, high octane, crime, crazy stuff. I'm from Tala, so we had I had a lot of material to work with from back then as well. So, but then you know, 20, 25 years past and your experience of life is different. And I think as long as you're kind of using what's kind of around you or what you're experiencing in your life, you advance and evolve as a writer, I suppose. So it's always nice to feel, you know, I did a lot of monologues in the early part of my writing career. And I did one called Terminus. And I went to write another one along the same lines. And I realized that Terminus was kind of as far as I could take that kind of play. Otherwise, I'd just be going back and repeating myself. And so I had to go through a sort of a period of recreation, in order to find out what was becoming of interest to me then. So you're just kind of following that, and at least you know then that if you're following your experiences in the world and how you're feeling, and that's always evolving, then your work will evolve as well. And
it has to be challenging though, because I assume that at the exact point at which you say I have taken that as far as I can go, you're also at the point where you have honed your capacity to write that kind of thing very well. And it must be hard to.
These are great questions, Anton, because I do have moments even now where I say, "Would you like to go back and do something like that again?" You know, you're good at that. You know, that the whole kind of poetic aspect and the idea of like the monologue, which is very, very different to the normal type of play where it's all got to survive on what's coming out of one actor's mouth. It's very literary, so there's a great sense of accomplishment in that, and poetry. And so I'd never say never. You know, at the moment I've no intentions to do that, but you'll see probably in about 6 months' time, you'll see a new play and it'll be a monologue. I don't know.
you, that thing of it's very literary and the enjoyment of the literary expression. Where did that come from? Where was the original interest in literature and language? Because it wasn't, you don't come from an arts background in family terms.
No, it's, so that goes right back to, you know, when I was growing up. No, I didn't come from an arts background. I didn't go to college. So what we did have was video recorders, if you remember those. And books. And so I was hugely into films and hugely into literature. And in fact, I only really started to learn about theatre was through reading people like Shakespeare and Chekhov as part of my literature reading, if you know what I mean. I was kind of, you know, tracking down books by great authors, and I'd heard that I knew Shakespeare obviously from school, but someone like Chekhov, I always remember reading my first Chekhov play and kind of finding really difficult, because it was like it doesn't flow. You have a character's name and then you have something that they say, and it's quite, you know, plays are quite hard to read. But and I really wanted to do something creative. I assume I always had that in me, but I just didn't have the confidence in terms of, you would read literature and it would be very literary, and I didn't even do too well in English in my Leaving Cert. So I just didn't really feel like I had the vocabulary or the grammatical skills or whatever else. And it was only when I started reading people like Pinter and Mamet, and even working my way back to Beckett, their stuff worked with a very, very limited vocabulary. And it was much more about music and repetition and pauses and all that kind of stuff. And I understood that immediately. And when I started off writing, I used to write these little sketches, maybe one or two pages long. And I knew what was great about those little tasks, and I've said this to a lot of people who I talk to about writing, setting yourself a little task where your task is like two pages long. It's not a mountain, right? But I would write those things and I would read over them, and I'll change this and I'll cut out that. And yeah, that reads a bit better now. And you'd go over it a few times and it would be sort of a finished thing. And that was a lovely small step, and that kind of led to bigger steps, which led to a career in writing. So I think the big catalyst was finding out that you could be a writer without having a huge command of the English language.
But I'm intrigued that they were the authors that you chose in a self-education. I mean, I would have thought that the vast majority of people who sit down and say, I am going to read Beckett or I am going to read Chekhov, do so because there is an exam in their future that they will have to sit on these authors. Yeah. There can't be many people who just sit down and say at 19 or 20, yeah, I'll read this out of interest.
It didn't work. It didn't exactly work like that. The way it worked was, like almost everyone of my generation, I started off reading horror novels, and you're reading them just for, you know, the
prurient crack.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then but I read a lot, and what happened was a certain kind of genre writing, I suppose, began to get a little bit stale for me, or a little bit repetitive, or a little bit boring. And I think my mind needed something a little bit more challenging. So what you would do is you'd have your ears open to what was kind of maybe trendy or hot in modern literature, you know, what was kind of out now that might have been a little bit more sophisticated or whatever. And I read through that and I was kind of voracious. And then you're hearing a lot about people like Tolstoy and Dostoevsky and Dickens and whoever else, all those 19th century writers. So you start working your way back to them, and I enjoyed those books. And so that's sort of, you know, and Beckett, I suppose, is an extreme, right? Because he's not really about story, you know, and I suppose narrative is the one thing that kind of hooks us into reading. But it was just, I loved Mamet. He was the first one, I discovered in that lineage. And then I loved Pinter. But Mamet said he was influenced by Pinter, and Pinter said he was influenced by Beckett. So you just sort of...
You just follow the chain all the way back.
Yeah, yeah. But also it's the furthest thing from academia. It's feeling it. It's moving you. And it was always about understanding something that you couldn't really put into words, but that you were really drawn to time and time again. So, yeah.
The play is going to be on 8th through 13th October. It is called Reunion. I'm not overstating it. The reviews are fabulous. Scintillating drama, says the Financial Times. An enormously enjoyable play, says the Irish Times. Cast are dazzling. Tour de force performances, says the Sunday Indo. Hugely enjoyable. It goes on and on and on. It is written by Mark O'Rourke. Hope it goes well in the Gaiety.
Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.